Hello and welcome to Books on the Go, a podcast where we talk about our book of the week. I'm Anna Bailey-Karras and I'm here with Amanda Hayes. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, Anna. Hello, everyone.
And I apologise in advance if we have a lot of background noise. We're just outside and social distancing again today, so hopefully it won't be too noisy. And today, this week, we've been reading Vernon Subutex by Virginie Despont, translated by Frank Wynne. And I listened, Amanda, to a few French podcasts to hear how her name was pronounced. Oh. And I wish I could say it the way they do. It's such a beautiful name. That's my closest approximation. But first book news, and the Stella Prize has been announced. And this is the prize, it's a $50,000 prize in Australia for the best book by a woman, and it can be fiction or non-fiction. And this year it was won by Jess Hill for her book See What You Made Me Do, which I was absolutely thrilled about. I've spoken about this before on the podcast, and this is a book about domestic violence in Australia mainly, but she references other countries' statistics and studies as well. And I've seen on Twitter she's actually updating it or adapting it for the US and the UK, which is great news because it sounds like that means it'll be published over there.
Yeah. It's also being made into an SBS three-part series as well.
Oh, good. Mm. Yes, I think I did know that, but yeah. I'd forgotten. So that's excellent. But it's a book about domestic abuse, what sort of forms that it takes. And she uses the word abuse, not violence, because she's very careful to point out that some of the worst cases are not actually physical violence. Obviously, the worst cases are homicide, but often that starts with abuse that's much more coercive control. And then she talks about, she examines why it happens, what the impacts are, and also what some of the solutions are and what are the things that are urgently needed to address it and to help the women and children who are affected by it. And so, of course, this is a very depressing subject matter and it would put a lot of people off reading it, I imagine, but it is not. I found her writing so engaging. It was really thoroughly researched, and in that sense I found it reassuring that someone has done the work to bring some order to this issue and to shed some light on it, obviously, and to sort of set out really clearly what all the factors are, and from there you can work out what could be done, and you can work on policy from that. And so in that sense I found that really positive, affirming book to read.
Okay. I haven't read it. I must admit I'm a bit cautious because of the subject matter, but I think it's something that I should read. I like the way too that she flipped the question from why doesn't the woman leave to the other side of the coin. What led the man to do it, and why does he do it, and why does he behave like that?
Yes, so focusing on the behaviour. Yeah. And also, she, on that question, why doesn't she leave, which is the age-old question in these cases, another thing that she says, which I found really interesting, is, you know, we should be thinking about how amazing when a woman stays, that she has developed the skills to adapt and survive this sometimes extremely dangerous situation day by day. She's actually incredibly resourceful, not just in terms of avoiding physical harm, but financially. You know, they often have to budget because there's also financial control being exerted sometimes there's all sorts of things that they're doing, and they might be doing that strategically so that when they are able to leave, they can. So it is, that makes you think of it differently as well. So it's a really excellent book and I'm so glad it won, and just really recommend it, and don't be put off by the depressing subject matter because she writes in a very engaging way about it. It's a really good read, and it's the first journalistic work to have won in the 8-year history of the Stella Prize.
Excellent.
So that's interesting.
So, well done.
Yes. Mm. So that was Jess Hill's See What You Made Me Do. So now on to our book of the week, which is Vernon Subutex by Virginie Despont, translated by Frank Wynne. And this is a trilogy. So there's Vernon Subutex 1, 2 and then soon to be published in English, number 3. And between Amanda and I, we've read both. We've both read number 1 and I've since read number 2 as well. And we're hoping we've covered all bases because I read number 1 a while ago. So Amanda will be able to remind me of what happened in number 1. And actually in number 2, she gives a handy little praisey of the characters in the first page and just mentions how they connect with the character of Vernon Supertex, which I found quite handy because I'd forgotten.
I wish I'd had that for number 1.
So I'd forgotten exactly who was who. So Virginie Despentes is a really interesting author. She's a French writer. She's been quite a rebel in her youth and she was a sex worker at some time. She's a feminist. She's a sensation in the literary world in France.
She is.
Her first novel was Baise-moi, which she wrote age 23, and she wrote it in 3 weeks staying at her parents' house. And it's a quite graphic novel about two women, and it's been described as all sorts of Thelma and Louise on cocaine, or makes Thelma and Louise look like a Merchant Ivory production, or and so on and so forth. So it's quite a graphic, violent, explicit book that was then made into a film. And interestingly, she said that she was influenced by Kathy Acker when she wrote that book. And another book Annie and I have done on the podcast is Crudo by Olivia Lang, which also references Kathy Acker.
Oh, right.
So it's interesting, these sort of 6 degrees of separation. Yeah. She's also well known for her non-fiction work, King Kong Theory, which is a book of feminist essays, which has been very influential as well. She's concerned with and writes about women who don't conform who don't conform with expectations of femininity or what they're supposed to do or how they're meant to dress. And essentially, you know, she says the world is geared to please men, and women as part of that are taught to do things and wear things that please men. And she's much more interested in women who don't do that, and she doesn't see them enough in literature, and she wants to give them a voice. So she says, you know, women who are difficult or prickly or dress differently. And she says, I'm writing as an ugly one for the ugly ones, for all those girls who don't get a second look in the universal market of the consumable chick. Which I think is brilliant. And so her earlier books are noted for having quite a lot of anger and rage running through them. And I think since that time she's mellowed. I don't know if she would say she's mellowed, but she's certainly not as angry. And she did say in an interview, if I was still furious 30 years later, I'd be dead, you know. I think because she was raped when she was young, and that's informed a lot of her work, and she's had to work through that. And she said, if I still had the rage that I had at age 23, I'd be dead by now, because I think what she's saying is it would be so toxic, you know.
And she also, to assist with her writing, gave up alcohol, I think.
Yes.
Because she said, you know, I want to see how well I can do this when I am clean, I guess.
Yeah. So she's had a very rock and roll lifestyle with all the sex, drugs and rock and roll, and she has consciously, she's given up alcohol, and she said, then she started smoking weed because she couldn't go completely abstinent from everything. But then that wasn't really helping her writing. So she's really, really interesting because she talks very openly. She's quite outspoken. Mm. You know, she's quite opinionated. And so there are some really interesting interviews with her that are worth reading. So Vernon Supertex, the trilogy, has more comedy elements to it. It's, you know, still very gritty and grungy and rock and roll, but it's got a more satirical comic aspect, I think. So the main character, Vernon Supertex, was the owner of a record shop and fell on hard times. And I think the market for the record shops has, you know, deteriorated. He has been supported by his friend Alex Bleach, who was a rock star, and he also was getting an unemployment benefit. But the unemployment benefit has stopped. His friend Alex Bleach has died of an overdose, and so he's really fallen on hard times now. All he has really are some tapes of, you know, his catch up with Alex Bleach, which he sort of vaguely realises might be valuable to someone. And notably, the producer, Laurent Dopelet, who wants those tapes. And Laurent Dopelet, hires the hyena, this fabulous character, the hyena, who was a private detective. And is she also a tattoo artist? Or she was a tattoo, or vice versa. I can't remember. Anyway, to find Vernon Subutex, who's now, no one knows where he is, to get the tapes back. And so that's as much as I remember from the plot of number one. And it goes on from there, and it becomes a sort of a chase to find him. And then I think each chapter's from the perspective of one of the characters, and all these characters kind of converge. And along the way, they have parties. So I think he DJs. There's a memorable scene where he's DJing a party, and that's what he does best, is sort of spinning the music and getting people into this euphoric dance sort of state. And then it ends. It doesn't end so well. We won't really give too much away, but he's certainly by the end still sort of hanging around in a park. And that's where we pick up in number two. So he's in a park, and in number two we meet some homeless people. The hyena is back, Laurent Dopelet is back, and there's more about the tapes, and we sort of learn a bit more about what's on the tapes. Okay. And there's still this hunt to get them, and the hyena has an interesting moral choice about, you know, if she does recover the tapes, will she actually give them to Laurent Dopelet, or is she going to be a bit more vigilante about it and deal with it differently? And so it's quite interesting. I think the second one is a bit more loose than the first one, but the first one was shortlisted for the Man Booker, as it then was, International Prize in 2018. It's had rave reviews. The Guardian said it's a foul-mouthed skewering of the morass that is modern society. Figaro magazine said a vast mural of the world today. We all knew DuPont could write, but we were not expecting this. The Express said, quite simply, it disturbs you. DuPont is an extraordinary writer. And Sunday Times said it's brimming with sex violence and deviant behaviour. So what did you think, Amanda?
Okay, well, this was for me a really fascinating read. So I'll just start by saying, I'll go back to what Anna said about Virginie Despont. She's been described as a queer punk wild child who is changing the landscape of French feminism. She's incredibly popular with younger French women. And she says, masculinity is the artillery that tears our bodies apart. Femininity is the drug of mass indoctrination. Yeah. So I think that's a really interesting take on it, particularly because of her personal experience. As Anna mentioned, she was raped at the age of 17, which has had a profound impact on her life and her writing.
Mm.
So the book is, I think, a snapshot of France, particularly Paris, and it's a pretty grim one. The book is full of bitterness, racism, aggression, misogyny, poverty, and you also see the elements of the rise of the right-wing extremism that's happening in France with some of the characters. So it's pretty disturbing, I think, from that point of view. As Anna mentioned, Vernon, the main character, he loses his record shop. He loses his livelihood because Alex Bleach, who was basically paying his rent and supporting him, has now died. So he basically finds himself without a livelihood, and he embarks on a period of couch surfing.
Yeah.
And so he contacts all these sort of old friends and acquaintances and spends some time living with a series of people. But obviously he can't outstay his welcome, so he might spend 3 or 4 days with a certain person and then move on. And each of the chapters is written from the point of view of the person that he is staying with at the time. So we do meet some pretty interesting characters. We meet Laurent Dopelet, who Anna mentioned before. He's a producer and he really wants to get his hands on those Alex Bleach tapes, and he hires the hyena, who Anna mentions. And she's a kind of a fixer.
Yeah.
But what she does is people employ her to basically destroy someone else's reputation via social media. So she's, you know, she's completely brutal, isn't she?
Yeah. It's a little bit far-fetched. It's a bit larger than life. Yeah, she's a great character, I think.
Yeah, she was one of my favourite. On the other characters I really liked were Pamela Cant, who is a porn star or a bit has-been porn star.
She was the former porn star.
Former porn star. And her partner, Daniel, who was formerly Deborah, I think, and Daniel has transitioned from female to male, so F2M, I believe.
Yes.
And so, you know, you come across these extraordinary characters who live in this crazy world of drugs and sex and violence. And
Pamela Cant is also an online Tetris champion. I just love that. I love those details.
And actually, one of the things that I liked about the book was she does have a sense of humour, as you mentioned. It's quite funny. And there is a scene where Vernon's describing a friend of his and he says that he's describing how she dresses. He says, "She used to wear khaki dresses that looked like they'd been cut from burlap sacks with a Stanley knife." And then he goes on to say, "One day when they were talking, Vernon realised that she spent a fortune on her clothes. It wasn't at all like he had imagined. She wasn't a depressive or a victim of sexual assault so traumatic that she felt the need to hide her body. She didn't cut up curtains for the pleasure of making ghastly clothes. On the contrary, these were eye-wateringly expensive outfits chosen with care." So that to me was just so funny.
Yeah,
so
it's classic, isn't it? Sort of a skewering of designer fashion.
Yeah, and exactly.
Just how that would look to someone who can't afford to shop but might have to actually inventively wear a curtain or something. Yeah. It's like what you choose to do.
Exactly.
That. It's crazy.
And you pay a lot of money for that. So,
Yeah,
look, I really enjoyed it. I did overall probably find it a little bit on the depressing side. The humour wasn't quite enough to carry me through.
Yes.
It just, I think the elements of the right-wing extremism and racism coming through were, I mean, it's probably a pretty accurate snapshot, and that is pretty sad.
Yeah. Did you read it? I read those elements as her not satirising them, but almost satirising them, but showing them, but not her own view.
I don't think it was her own view.
Yeah. It was almost a spoof on it, but not quite,
because
it was very real. It's a very realistically written book.
Too real almost to be a spoof, I think. And because we do know that that is happening in Europe.
Yeah. And this was all written around the time of a couple of events that happened in Paris. One was there was an attack at a large concert.
Yes.
And another one was in the editorial offices of the magazine.
Oh, that's right.
The Je Suis Charlie Hebdo, was it?
That's right.
So it is all too close to home, isn't it? But no, I really loved it. The first one, as I say, I read a year or two ago, so it's a little bit hazier in my memory, but I remember just loving the energy of it. And the same thing with the second one, which really picks up where the first one left off, but I would say is just a little bit looser in style. Mm-hmm. And there's just a series of characters, sort of monologues, and in the similar structure, but I thought not quite as tight as the first one. But what I love is the energy of the prose, the feeling that you are meeting people that you don't normally meet in fiction, and you're getting an insight into for example, as you say, couch surfing. Like this is real life that we're often very sheltered from. But Virginie Despentes has spoken about how she's noticed with friends, people don't speak up if they're running low on money because they feel embarrassed, but she'll notice that if they, for example, will be happy for you to come to their house or to come to your house, but they'll kind of not come out if you say, let's go and meet in a bar, because then they'd have to buy a beer or buy, you know, things like that. She just notices that, and then they'll sort of drop off the radar. And so this is very much, and I think we'll find now in the aftermath of this pandemic with people losing jobs, that this will be more of a phenomenon, if anything. But people who are sort of on the margins and on the fringe, and I suppose in a city like Paris, which would be quite unforgiving and expensive to live in, you know, how they're surviving. And Vernon Subutex, she spoke about how him owning a record shop is the perfect way to explore this, because that's such a transition of the old economy to the new economy. That's the classic job. We've got all sorts of noise going on here. We've got a random helicopter, which we never normally have in the quiet suburbs, and we've got some construction as well, so it's all happening. So the couch surfing, the characters are on the fringe, and that's even more so in the second one. You have a lot of homeless characters and
the other,
just their day to day.
Well, what's interesting too, Anna, is that couch surfing is something you kind of associate with younger generations, but what's happening here, he's a Gen, you know,
Gen Xer. Oh, it's a very sort of, Gen X book. Yeah. That was the other thing I was going to say. Yeah. It's a classic for our sort of era, like the music and it is a very Gen X
and
kind of tone.
And if you fall out of the labour market at that age, it's very difficult to get back in.
Yeah.
And that, I think that's another point she's making.
Yes, that's right. And he's a classic person of his era, isn't he? And it's, the record shop is really highlights that. And she has speaking of that, she's talked about how she thinks it's become success. These books are successful partly because it's a male protagonist.
Yeah.
And she said because it's a male protagonist, it's seen as this exploration of Paris and, you know, existential crisis. She said if I'd written it about a woman, it would have been, oh, you know, an old woman couldn't get her act together or something, made some bad choices and fell on hard times or something like that. So she said it would have been treated differently in her view. But yes, I just loved the really, really interesting characters who I normally don't meet in fiction.
Mm.
The fact that it's unvarnished, that it is done with some humour and comedy, although I agree with you, there's still a depressing element to it, which reflects probably her anger at certain elements of society and the patriarchy and politics and what's going on.
It is certainly.
And that comes through.
It does. It's very real, isn't it?
It's very real.
I think someone who had come from a sort of more intellectual background as an author and went to university and couldn't really write this book.
No, that's right. So in that sense, it's a little bit like the Rachel Kushner Mars Room, where you have to have lived a bit, you know, and she's a woman of the world. She has really lived amongst these people and she knows what she's writing
she's
about.
She's very astute, isn't she?
Astute observations, and I think that authenticity comes through.
Definitely.
And the other thing I really loved about it was the energy of the writing, and there's something about her writing that's quite, that propels you along. And in that sense, I would liken it a bit to Elena Ferrante's Neapolitan Quartet. It's different, but it's that same immersion into a city, but a poorer view, you know, into a city. Not the postcard of the city, but what it's really like to live in that city if you're poor and when times are tough, and that undercurrent of violence, and just this, even when there's not a lot happening in the plot, there's just a liveliness and a sort of rhythm to her prose. The translation in one of the reviews I read was criticised as not being that good by someone who sort of, I think she was French-American, and she said,
I think she said the vernacular wasn't quite right.
Yes, and I think that it would have been challenging because Virginie Despentes writes with such an ear for the vernacular.
Yeah.
It would have been hard to translate. But even bearing that in mind, I still found it a thoroughly immersive
certainly
read.
It had energy, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And I just have to say, Anna, I love on the back cover of the book, the picture of the author, and she's got a cigarette dangling from her mouth, a cloud of smoke around her head. That just makes me laugh.
Yeah.
I just think, God, she's just her own person.
Yes,
you know?
Yeah, very much so. And the book has both books and the third one, from what I've seen as well, have stunning covers. And I want to say, but I just can't remember the details, but I'm sure that the cover for the first one has won an award for book cover design. I'm sure that I've read that somewhere. But anyway, really fabulous covers. So it's worth just buying it for the cover sometimes. But anyway, so yeah, so I think I liked it more than you, Amanda.
Yeah, I definitely really enjoyed it. I just didn't love it.
But no, it's another side of Paris. The other book that I would compare it to, just if that it reminded me a little bit of, is 10 Minutes 38 Seconds in This Strange World by Elif Shafak, which also just has those wonderful diverse characters. So that's another one that sort of sprang to mind. So for me, I found that really refreshing. That was one of the things I loved. So that was Vernon Subutex 1 and 2 by Virginie Despont, and that's translated by Frank Nguyen. And next week, what is coming up? I'm doing a special episode with Jenny Colvin from the Reading Envy podcast.
Fantastic.
Yes, one of my other favourite bookish podcasts in the States. And we're reading American Sunrise by Joy Harjo for National Poetry Month.
Oh, fantastic. So that'd be great.
I'm out of my comfort zone, Amanda.
Yeah. Poetry.
Breaking
that's
into
scary.
Poetry. It is for me. I know it shouldn't be, but that's coming up. And also, we are reading The Girl Who Wrote Loneliness
yes.
by Kyung Suk Shin. And then I think Annie and I might be doing a bit of an isolation reads special.
Oh, good idea.
So we've been collating and I've been posting a little bit of what we're all doing for, you know, what sort of books we're turning to for isolation reading. And some of them it's good to talk through, you know, the reasons why. So we thought we might do an episode on that. So that's all coming up. And in the meantime, you can follow us on Facebook at Books on the Go or email us at booksonthegopodcast@gmail.com. And I'm on Instagram, Litzy, and Twitter at A. Bailey Karras. And Amanda?
I'm on Instagram at Amanda L. Hayes 99.
Fabulous. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.